It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. As we've heard in our news at the top of the hour, so much focus continuing to be put on the national election, the presidential election. But right here in Iowa, the stakes in the legislative elections very high, and the outcome hangs in the balance. For instance, the Democrats hold a slim majority in the Iowa Senate. Now, if the GOP here in Iowa can change that, it will be the first time Republicans are in charge of both houses and the governor's office since the 1990s. Joining us to talk about some key races in both the Iowa Senate and House, along with some major issues on voters' minds. Joyce Russell is with us in our Des Moines studio, State House correspondent for Iowa Public Radio. Hi, Joyce.
Hello, Ben.
In Des Moines as well, Aaron Murphy, Des Moines bureau chief for Lee Enterprises. Aaron, thank you for stepping into the studio with us.
Hello, Ben. Thanks for having me.
You two will be with us the whole hour, and you get to help sort of co-host the program because the three of us journalists get to, in this first half hour, talk with Republican Party of Iowa Chairman Jeff Kaufman, who's joining us by phone. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for joining us. And also by phone, Senator Mike Gronstahl, Senate Majority Leader and Democratic State Senator from Council Bluffs. Senator Gronstahl, so good you could join us.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so the three of us are going to join in and ask you a few questions about what you see as far as potential election outcomes and what your goals are here. Let me start with you, Jeff Kaufman. What's at stake from your perspective?
Well, as you said, it's been since the 1990s since Republicans have had control of both houses and the governorship. And what I hear a lot when I'm crisscrossing Iowa, and that is, why do so many bills in the House that are passed with strong bipartisan support, why do they end up doing nothing, going nowhere, not even getting a debate in the Senate? I think probably open debates and more transparency is what's up for grabs if Republicans are able to take control of the state Senate.
Mm-hmm. Senator Gronstahl, I don't know if you want to answer that question. Why?
I'd be happy to answer that question. We actually got a preview of what it would be like if Republicans took control, because when they took control of the House in the 2010 election, one of the first things they did is effectively repealed the right to collectively bargain for public employees. They went after repealing the preschool programs that we had created under Tom Vilsack. They attacked workers' rights. They reduced access to health care. They attacked voting rights. They attacked women's rights. They underfunded education. We have a great preview of what the Republicans would do if they took control. And the reason bills that came over from the House died in the Senate is because they were bad ideas. Things like making it impossible for women to get access to birth control pills or IUDs. They have a pretty extreme agenda, and they have demonstrated that. They demonstrated it in 2011 session. And, yes, we killed some really awful bills that came over from the House.
Jeff Kaufman.
You know, and they came over from the House with strong Democratic support. And how he characterized that 2011 session, I was actually there, and I would disagree across the board with his characterization. Sounds like a lot of rhetoric and not a whole lot of valid facts on that analysis.
Jeff. Well, apparently, Jeff, you didn't actually read the bill on collective bargaining because it effectively repealed collective bargaining for public employees in the state of Iowa.
Apparently, I read it thoroughly with all due respect,
Senator. Apparently you don't understand that.
No, I think I'm pretty good along those lines.
Let me jump in here, too, because
you can characterize that any way you'd like.
We won't have the time to get down into the weeds individually on these races. Jeff Kaufman, let me ask you, which Senate seats do you see as most vulnerable? Which are Senator Gronstahl's seat, for instance, if you look at the money spent, I guess?
I think so, and we're looking at 5 to 7 seats. I did hear that the Democratic caucus staff was in Council Bluffs doing some door knocking, so I think that's a sign that our hunch that there may be some vulnerabilities there may be valid. We're looking at the Mary Jo Wilhelm seat, a seat in Marshalltown that's currently held by Senator Saunders. Muscatine, I think, have a tremendous amount of resources spent there. The Shane John seat, where we have an outstanding candidate, Craig Johnson, about 5 to 7 scattered throughout. There's a bit of a concentration in the first district, but those are the areas where we're hoping to make those gains that we need to in order to gain this majority.
Mm-hmm. Senator Gronstahl, how are you feeling about your race and the other perhaps vulnerable ones that Jeff Kaufman just mentioned?
Well, listen, we have a great set of candidates that are running for re-election. They have done a great job in the legislature focusing on growing the middle class instead of all these divisive issues that are about dividing islands. And they're doing a great job of campaigning. We have hit more doors in terms of door knocking than we've ever hit in our history. So I feel like we got a great shot at returning every one of our incumbents. And then we have three or four Republican seats that are in our sights as well. So we think we got a great opportunity to hang on to the majority and pick up a few seats. And we look forward to Election Day because we think Iowans are starting to figure out how extreme this Republican caucus is. By the way, the governor just today announced going to come up with more money for the managed care organizations at the same time that Iowans are being denied services and providers are not getting paid, but the governor's going to make sure the out-of-state managed care companies get more resources.
Mm-hmm. Aaron Murphy of Lee Enterprises there in Des Moines, what do you want to pitch in or ask here at this point as we discuss specifically the Senate? I suppose we'll get to the House in a little bit.
Yeah, thanks. Senator Gronstall, I'd like to ask you, in many of the seats that are seen as the so-called battleground seats in the Senate here, you have the Democratic incumbent, but on the other hand, in a lot of those, actually I think in most of those seats, there's a registered voter advantage for the Republicans. In 2012, those districts went for the Democrats. President Obama won those districts. How confident are you that those no-party voters in those battleground districts will vote Democrat again and help keep your Democratic incumbents in those seats?
Well, since we go out and actually talk to the voters, knock on doors, thousands of doors, every one of our candidates have knocked on thousands of doors, and we have every reason to believe that we're going to convert those no-party voters to the Democratic cause. But remember, Republicans said all of these same things. They said it in 2012. They said it in 2014. We were a target then. Nothing has really changed. These districts are effectively the same districts they were. Some of them have had a little bit of population growth. But overall, we have every reason to believe we can hang on to these incumbents.
And that steals my next question back to you, Mr. Kaufman. Like the senator said, if we're looking at the same kind of races, the same partisan breakdown going into this election as we were in 2012, and especially if it didn't happen in a 2014 Republican wave election, what gives you the confidence that Republicans can pick up those extra seats in this presidential election year?
That's a fair question, Aaron. Several things. First of all, these districts are Republican-leaning, and everyone that analyzes these Senate districts understand that this particular cycle that is definitely leaning in Republicans' favor. Also, I don't believe we've ever had the majority leader of the Senate actually having his caucus staff out knocking on doors just a couple of weekends before the election. I think that shows a vulnerability that we have not seen before. Our candidates have gone out and they have knocked on, we have five candidates knocked on 20,000 doors. The other thing we're not seeing, Aaron, is that Republicans are not playing defense. Senator Gronstall might be saying that they are going after some other seats, but those seats, like the Zumbaugh seat, Breitbach seat, we're not seeing any pushbacks whatsoever. So you've got a Republican caucus that is actually playing almost 100% offense and not having to spend resources on defending anything. And so in that particular case, I like my chances. I like our chances. I like Iowa's chances because when you look at what we are campaigning on, it's education, it's jobs, it's economic development, trying to make sure that Iowa moves its way out of this sluggish economy that's one of the slowest running economies since World War II. That's what we're trying to do with our agenda that has been put together after talking to thousands of Iowans.
All you have to do is look at Kansas. When Republicans controlled everything in Kansas, their extreme agenda led the state to a position where it's essentially bankrupt now. They're underfunding education. Let me repeat, the Republicans showed us a preview of what they will do. They'll repeal collective bargaining. They'll attack access to health care and women's rights. They'll repeal the preschool program, and they'll continue to underfund K through 12 education. We've had the worst 6 years in the history of the school aid formula. under the Republicans in the House, and it's only through the sake of Democrats pushing back on them and on the governor that we've been able to eke out a few additional resources for K-12 education in this state.
I would say
just look at what happened under the Culver administration when the Democrats had full control and we actually had to cut schools. So I'm going to put, as a 25-year educator, I'm going to put my trust in that Republican majority in the Senate.
I would like to, this is Joyce Russell, I'd like to maybe correct a little bit what Mr. Kaufman said a little earlier. He said that in past elections he'd never seen Senate Democratic Caucus staff actually out on the ground campaigning, and I know for a fact that's not true, but... I wanted to ask Senator Gronstahl.
I've seen Joyce. I'm just reflecting on what I have seen.
Okay. And Senator Gronstahl, I'd like for you to talk about, we've made mention that these targeted districts, the independents in those districts apparently went for Obama. At any rate, the Republican-leaning districts, Obama won handily. Does that really give you confidence, or is it another way of looking at that it's unlikely that Hillary Clinton will be as popular as Barack Obama?
Here's the reality. Here's the historical reality. The top of the ticket doesn't determine outcomes in Iowa, okay? In 1996, when Bill Clinton was cruising to easy reelection, the Republicans took the Senate away from the Democrats. At the same time, the House went from 36 seats to 47 seats in that time frame. So the top of the ticket doesn't really matter. In 2004, when George Bush was cruising to easy reelection against John Kerry, the Senate Democrats tied the Iowa Senate, brought back a net of 5 seats. So the reality is the top of the ticket doesn't matter. What really matters is having good candidates that fit the district, that are already leaders in their community, and getting those people to run for office, run smart, savvy campaigns, and do the shoe leather, okay? Republicans talk a lot about knocking doors. They don't actually knock on the doors. They walk up and they leave pieces of literature on the doorsteps. I've seen it all over Council Bluffs. So they don't actually really talk to people. Democrats actually talk to people and hear their concerns, and that's why people tend to vote Democratic in these down-ballot races.
But Senator Gronstahl,
so
does...
I assume you're going to fact-check that one. We absolutely door-knock. We've had 20,000 doors knocked by our 5 candidates for a total of 100,000. Let me tell you something, Dan Dawson.
I know for a fact, Jeff, that that's not true about Dan Dawson. But if you want to talk about Dan Dawson, his agenda is so extreme that he wants to make it easier for people with mental health problems to be able to own a firearm. Okay, that's how extreme these Republican
Jeff Kaufman, let me ask you a specific question following up on Joyce's question about Clinton being at the top of the ticket rather than Obama. We saw that one of your Senate members defected from the party, rather gave up his party affiliation, State Senator David Johnson, a longtime GOP member of the Iowa Senate, because I believe the straw that broke the camel's back was Donald Trump's comments about Judge Curiel, of Mexican descent, actually born in the United States. What is the potential impact that you see? Do you see a downside to Trump being at the top of the ticket, especially because there already have been repercussions here in Iowa in the name of David Johnson?
A couple of things. I think that's a fair question. First of all, I would actually agree with Senator Gronstahl in terms of his analysis, said it on multiple times, that the top of the ticket is secondary to the quality of candidates you have and the amount of voter contacts that they're making. So I guess the top of the ticket is not nearly as important to me as quality individuals like Jeff Edler and Waylon Brown and Dan Dawson and Mark Lofgren and Craig Johnson. In terms of Senator Johnson, there's a lot of theories as to why Senator Johnson defected from the party. Some of them have not a whole lot to do with Donald Trump and his comments. So I'm going to let Senator Johnson talk about motive there, but I can tell you that the quality of candidates that we have and the amount of doors and personal contacts that they're making and their emphasis on jobs and education, I believe is going to resonate with voters regardless of who is at the top of the ticket.
Let me remind our listeners, you're listening to River to River on Iowa Public Radio. We have Jeff Kaufman, the Republican Party of Iowa chair, also Senator Mike Gronstahl with us, Senate Majority Leader, talking about legislative politics ahead of the election. Also Joyce Russell, our State House correspondent, and Aaron Murphy, Des Moines Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises. Aaron, I know you wanted to jump in there. Please do so now. We have 7 or 8 minutes left.
Yeah, I was just going to follow up real quick and to the point that the impact that the top of the ticket has on down ballot races I think is valid. But what I would ask both gentlemen is, does it not at least impact it in terms of voter turnout and getting your party's voters out to the ballots either early or on election day? Can the top of the ticket not have an impact in that sense?
Senator Gronstahl, perhaps you first, perhaps on enthusiasm or enthusiasm gap, as it may be.
Well, there's two kinds of enthusiasm. One is enthusiasm for the candidate, and the other is enthusiasm for defeating the alternative candidate. Both of those have some impact. I think it's pretty close to impossible to predict how that's going to play out, okay? It might play out to Democrats' advantage. It might play out to Republicans' advantage. You know, 2014... for a political year was a pretty darn Republican year, and we hung on to the majority in that pretty darn Republican year. And 2010 was a lousy Democratic year, and we hung on to the majority. There's not a good reason to believe that the top of the ticket is going to have that much of an impact here. And what I say to all of our candidates, don't worry about the top of the ticket or the national mood. Worry about getting yourself reelected, talking to as many voters as possible, and going out and making those voter contacts and doing the absentee ballot effort and all of those kinds of things. That's what will make a difference in your campaigns. And when it's all said and done, both Jeff and I can speculate for hours on end why we've got the advantage or why they've got the advantage. But the reality is it's the hard work of candidates that wins campaigns.
Jeff Kaufman, your view on turnout. I want to throw this out here on the top of the turnout, too, and this is not a scientific analysis or anything. I'm seeing fewer yard signs out there for presidential candidates, for candidates, period. Does that match up with turnout, perhaps? Lack of enthusiasm.
I definitely think there's a connection on turnout. I think Senator Gronstahl, I have found one area of agreement here in terms of the quality of the candidate in the legislative races, but I can just reflect on there was a very good head-to-head matchup in terms of enthusiasm in Cedar Rapids last Friday, where Mrs. Clinton, Secretary Clinton, had less than 1,000 people. Donald Trump had 5,000. There certainly an affected turnout on a beautiful, beautiful Friday in order to hear the speeches. I think that this last element of the FBI investigation being a part of the scene again and part of the national scene, I do believe that could affect turnout. I believe it could depress Democratic turnout and enhance Republican turnout, especially those folks that are on the fence about if they're going to vote at all or if they're going to vote for Trump. I think they may take a look at that. But I believe that it depends on those candidates. That's why our five candidates knocking on 100,000 doors gives me a great deal of confidence.
Senator Gronstahl, do you see the FBI revelations in the recent days, as Jeff Kaufman said, perhaps depressing turnout from among Democrats?
You know, all of this stuff in the last 10 days of the campaign, I'm sitting at home here in the evenings after door knocking time and watching TV and watching the dueling ads on TV, and I think we've come to the point where most voters are absolutely just tuning out on all of that stuff, and they're going to go in on election day and make their decision. But I think the negativity of the campaign has been so bad that most people just want this thing to be over with.
Senator Gronstahl, and a little bit of time we have left, and then same question for you, Mr. Kaufman. Name one or two of the challengers that your party has attracted this year that you're especially excited about.
I'll be happy to go first, but why in the world would I warn anybody of where I think I've got some opportunities? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say we're going to work really hard to elect our candidates across the board in the state of Iowa. We think we've got a great shot at doing that, and we think the extreme agenda of the Republicans needs somebody to block the crazier things they propose.
Jeff Kaufman, you want to jump in on Joyce's question there?
Well, I would concur that I think Bill Dix would have a little conversation with me if I let out some areas where we're going to target. But we obviously have five to eight areas in districts where we are going to work
hard. It's gone up one from five to seven to five to eight.
Well, I'm talking in general, but you know, I might add that all eight of those are on offense because we're not having to play defense. And one of those would certainly be Dan Dawson down in Council Bluffs. But what I believe is the most important here is the fact that those candidates fit the district. They are talking about what Iowans want to hear, and that is job creation, economic development, education, making sure we don't go back to the years of Culver and Murphy and Gronstahl when we were actually cutting education. That's what we want to do, a mainstream agenda for a Middle West state. And I think with 100,000 doors under our belt, I think we're poised to do that.
Okay, Jeff Kaufman and Senator Gronstahl, we have just less than 2 minutes here. I wanted a very brief answer from each of you on this question, the what-if question. What if Donald Trump becomes president? And on the other side, what if Hillary Clinton becomes president? Does that make any difference in state house politics? Jeff Kaufman, I'll give a minute to you.
I think it might, because I believe that if Hillary Clinton is president, it's the same old thing, and we're going to have mandates on the state, crushing type taxes coming from the federal government, and our farmers are going to have a very difficult time. If it's Donald Trump, get ready, because we're going to have change, and I think the people's voice in Iowa will also be heard at the state house a lot better.
Senator Gronstahl.
Well, I think if Hillary Clinton's president, we're going to have a stronger economy. We're going to have a growing middle class instead of an attack on the middle class. We will quit going through these battles to make it harder for people to get access to health care coverage. We will fix the health care system instead of just dismantle what's happened. So I think we got a great shot at working, But the reality is, when it's all said and done, we're going to have an election in 8 days and 8.5 hours, and it behooves all of us when that election is over, regardless of the outcome, to set aside our partisan differences and to look for common ground and work with both parties to accomplish good things for our state.
Senator Gronstahl, will that be harder this year than other years in the past?
You mean because of the negativity? Of
right,
the
to set aside those differences and unite.
That's the reality of the challenge we have. You know, some of the most effective things we got done were when we were tied in the Iowa Senate after the 2004 election.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Mike Gronstahl, thank you for joining us. Republican Party of Iowa Chairman Jeff Kaufman, thank you both for being on to give us your different perspectives here. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Back in just a minute, Joyce Russell continuing with us, State House Correspondent for Iowa Public Radio, Aaron Murphy of Lee Enterprises. We'll talk, the three of us, about some of these same themes. We'd like to have you join our conversation. What are your questions about Iowa legislative races and the balance of power in the State House? I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, we'll be remembering the mass shooting that took place on the University of Iowa campus 25 years ago. That was November 1st, 1991, when a 28-year-old University of Iowa student went on a shooting rampage, killing four members of the university faculty, also killing a student, and also seriously wounding another student before taking his own life. We'll talk about that and also how security has changed in terms of active shooter training, also mental health services for college students. And ask the question, has college become more stressful? That's tomorrow on the program. Today we're talking about legislative races, as we are just a few days away from the election, about 1 week. So much of the focus has been on the presidential election, but right here in Iowa, the stakes in the legislative elections very high. For instance, a lot of attention being given to the Iowa Senate, where the Democrats for the past two elections have held on to a very slim majority, 26 to 24. Joining us to talk about not only the Iowa Senate, but the Iowa House, Aaron Murphy, Des Moines Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises in our Des Moines studio, along with Joyce Russell, State House Correspondent for Iowa Public Radio. So, Aaron and Joyce, now that we Jeff Kaufman of the Republicans and Mike Ronstadt of the Democrats have left our conversation. I can kind of ask you, there was a back and forth there. Let's talk about the Senate and then the House and then maybe some of the issues that you see as impacting people's decisions here at the ballot box. But in the Senate, Joyce Russell, are the Democrats in any more serious jeopardy of losing that slim majority than they have been in the last two elections?
I don't think so. I posed that exact question to Senator Gronstall. What's different now than in the last two elections when you succeeded in defending your slim majority? And he said he didn't really see too much difference.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, how do you read that?
Yeah, it's going to be tough, and that was why I asked Mr. Kaufman that. In particular, I look at 2014, which was a wave election. We went from a perfectly split down the middle Iowa federal delegation to 5-1 Republican advantage when Republicans picked up two U.S. House seats. Republican gains across the country, and yet that state Senate here stayed 26-24 in favor of Democrats. If it didn't happen in that election, why is there reason to believe that it would in this one? The Republicans talk about their ground game and how they've been increasing that and getting more registered voters under their belts, which is true, and it is true that they have a voter registration advantage in those battleground districts. But it also comes back to the Democrats have the incumbents, which is always a powerful thing in elections, and particularly in Iowa, and they have the no-party voters in those districts have tended to be Democratic-leaning voters, so that would have to change for Republicans to pick up a couple of those seats as well.
I would say that I kind of disagree with what both of the guests were saying about how the presidential race is not likely to make a difference. I feel that the variance between the popularity of Barack Obama and the popularity of Hillary Clinton, I just feel like that's going to have an effect on those independent voters with each of these districts. You know, they say, well, this went for Obama, this one went for Obama, sometimes wide margins. I just don't know how they can count on that with Secretary Clinton.
Right. We have two of the most unloved, according to polls, presidential candidates in recent history. Donald Trump was significantly higher negatives than Hillary Clinton, but her negatives very high, too. Aaron, what did you want to say?
I would agree with that, and I think that is the big unknown that we won't know until late evening of November 8th and into November 9th is what that turnout is, whether that top-of-the-ticket race, that presidential race, kind of turns people off from voting and what that impact means. There are, and it's interesting because it's on both sides, that there's concern on the Democratic side that there's an enthusiasm gap between what there was for President Obama and what there is for Hillary Clinton. There's concern of what some of the things that Donald Trump has said over the course of his campaign, how that will impact Republican voters. So I think that's the big unanswered question going into November 8th.
And then I would add on this question of the Trump-Clinton campaign, how it's going to affect things. In the House, at least, the minority leader predicted that it would work to their advantage in some of the suburban races where, in his words, women are quickly running away from Donald Trump. I guess that remains to be seen, but he's making that prediction.
So if they didn't want to vote for Donald Trump, they would have to split the ticket then and go back to the Republicans in the legislature. You talk about the House. Let's talk a little bit about that. In a recent article, Aaron, you wrote that Republicans have controlled the legislative agenda in the Iowa House since the 2010 GOP wave election. And you asked the question in your article at the outset, could 2016 be another wave election that swings the pendulum and allows Democrats to control or regain control of that chamber? What are your thoughts now on that?
I think I would have to say it seems unlikely at this point. I think maybe early in this election season, Democrats in particular were emboldened by that possibility when Mr. Trump's campaign was maybe struggling. And I think they saw an opportunity that maybe they could really chip into that advantage, if not even flip the Iowa House. I think as the campaign has gone on here, if you look at the public polling, I was very competitive at the presidential level. Mr. Trump isn't doing as poorly here as he is in many other swing states. So I don't think there's much chance of a Democratic wave in Iowa anyways that's going to be enough to change control of the Iowa House. Maybe Democrats could pick off a seat or two here and make that a little more narrow margin, but I don't see a change of control in that chamber.
Des Moines Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises, Aaron Murphy, with us along with our own Joyce Russell, State House Correspondent for Iowa Public Radio. Join us this last few minutes with your question about the Iowa legislative races, the issues we want to talk about now that are going to be top perhaps top of the shelf in voters' minds, but then also in the new legislative session. Joyce, talk about that. We heard some of the our participants, Jeff Kaufman and Mike Gronstahl, listing some of their some of the issues that they see real differences on: collective bargaining, health care, women's health care in particular, preschool and K through 12 education funding. Joyce, what do you see as pivotal here?
Well, I would maybe add to that list gun rights, tax law, where you would almost certainly see a much different agenda in a Republican-controlled Senate than you would in a than you do currently. Initially, I mean, Senator Gronstahl had a very comprehensive list there.
Yes, he
when,
did.
When I spoke to him earlier, he mentioned health care in particular, with the Medicaid privatization. Currently, they haven't had too much, frankly, haven't had too much effect on the privatization, but they certainly had a voice because there is an official committee overseeing that, and the Democrats co-chair that, and so they would lose that. They would lose that voice. They would not have that official place to call hearings and such. And the other thing he mentioned was the closing of the mental health institutes. Governor Branstad has closed, you know, a handful of state institutions, the juvenile home and then the mental health institutes. On that, I feel like Governor Branstad hasn't had any trouble at all doing that, even with a divided legislature. So I don't see the Republican Senate making too much difference there.
Aaron Murphy, what do you have to add in terms of issues that make a difference this election?
Well, I think there's two questions here. What are some of the issues that may get brought up differently depending on whose control? Republicans mm-hmm. would maybe have more focus on tax policy and other things versus what Democrats might do. And then there's a couple issues out there that I think either party is going to have to tackle when they come into the session next year, no matter who's in control. Now, but what matters is how they come at it, and one of those is water quality. No matter who's in control, that's going to be a huge issue in the Iowa legislature next year. But like I said, what does matter based on the elections is how legislators choose to come at water quality. There is a different political view about that. The Republicans in control of the House last year proposed a kind of hodgepodge arrangement of moving some existing programs around. Well, Democrats opposed that, but they also didn't really – they had a few proposals, but they didn't act on any of them. So we didn't really get a real clear plan from the Democrats. You hear more support building for the state sales tax, the water and land conservation, and forgive me for not having that acronym completely right, but to fund the natural resources program with a 3/8 of a cent sales tax increase. So which party is in control of the Senate and the House next year will have a large say over how legislators come at this significant issue here in Iowa.
Governor Branstad was very supportive of the water quality bill that the House Republicans passed last year, which Aaron was just describing. And so I would predict that if the Republicans control the Senate, we'll probably see something similar to that passing both chambers.
Mm-hmm. Joyce, you mentioned gun rights, gun advocacy, and gun control as a possible issue here. That makes a difference to voters and also be addressed possibly in the next session. Let's hear a couple voices, one on each side of the debate here. Let's listen to, in this area, a radio ad that the Iowa Firearms Coalition a radio ad ran against State Senator Democrat Steve Sodders in Senate District 36. Let's listen to it.
Did you know that for years, Democrats in the Iowa Senate have refused to do their jobs? When bills that guarantee your Second Amendment rights are brought forward, Democrats in the Iowa Senate refuse to vote on them. Iowans expect our lawmakers to do their jobs and not bury their heads in the sand. Yet that's exactly what Iowa Senate Democrats are doing year in and year out. This election day, vote for someone who will go to work for you. Vote Jeff Edler. Paid for by the Iowa Firearms Coalition Political Action Committee.
Okay, on the other side of the issue, Moms for Gun Safety, making independent expenditures for a representative race in Cedar Rapids. They volunteered for the campaigns of Democrats in the Senate. And Amber Gustafson is with Moms for Gun Safety. Here's a bit of her explaining the significance of the legislature in gun laws.
We do have several senators who have been really instrumental and in helping us fight bad gun bills.
Okay, a couple of voices there. We'll no doubt return to that in the next session. Comment on that, Aaron Murphy. Do you see gun rights, gun control playing a big role here?
Well, yeah, absolutely. In the sense of what we like we talked about, if Republicans gain control of the Senate and assuming they keep the House, then you have full control of state government, and you're going to have a lot different agenda of legislation put forth. And I have little doubt that you would see legislation that would be more expanding as Republicans would put it, expanding of Second Amendment rights, or as Democrats would put it, more loose gun control laws. And then it would be interesting to see what Governor Branstad would do with those if he gets to his desk. But yeah, absolutely, this election. That's an example of an issue that could change the agenda at the State House next year.
I have to say, though, that the Firearms Coalition has not been as big a voice in this as they were predicting. At the very end of the session, you know, they were quite worked up about the children handling guns,
right.
That bill
mm-hmm.
being defeated, another bill that had to do with the confidentiality of gun permits. There were quite a vocal about we're going to raise a lot of money, we're going to do all of this, and in the end they haven't raised that much money and haven't spent that much money as much as they had promised. So I'm a little bit surprised that that hasn't gone any further than it did. For that children handling firearms, though, I did notice the Firearms Coalition among their contributors, you know, they raised a certain amount of money. And among their contributors was a man named Nathan Gibson, and he is the man who brought his daughters to the Capitol the last two sessions, and they spoke in favor of being allowed to handle guns at a younger age. So they kind of tapped some talent.
In the presence of an adult, their right. parent, right, being right. trained at a firing range, for instance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me throw out medical cannabis. That's an issue that has been had a lot of attention nationwide, and of course more and more states adopting medical cannabis laws, but also a few with recreational cannabis use. Where's that going here in Iowa, do the two of you think?
Well, I think that no matter what, Aaron, back me up here, but I think no matter what happens in the Senate, whether it stays Democratic or Republican, I just don't see that moving. They weren't able to get it through, you know, they weren't able to get Democratic marijuana liberalization laws passed in the House, and the House isn't, so if the Republicans are there, I just don't see that's going to make much difference.
Yeah, you're going to have to change minds in the legislature to move that. But that is a good example, though. It will be something that they'll have to address, because the current limited law, for all its limitations that users of the program say it's largely useless because of it, that's expiring here this year. So it's either going to go away altogether, or lawmakers are going to have to put something together to either keep that limited program going or maybe expand on it. I think Joyce is right. It's going to be a tough hill to climb. I will say, though, that there has been, you know, we at least saw a proposal and a vote on the floor last year, which we hadn't seen in the years before. The group of advocates on this issue are, I think it's fair to say, relentless. They're very impassioned folks about this issue, and they are good at keeping it in the public discourse. So it will be interesting to see, you know, does that movement take another step forward? But the next step is such a huge one, to mm-hmm. approve the to let people grow it and produce it and dispense it in the state. That's a very big step from where we are right now.
Well, Aaron and Joyce, I could step outside the studio and get in the car, and it wouldn't take me very long. Wouldn't take either of you very long to see someone texting while driving going on here. I know that's been talked about at the legislature. We have scientific studies that say texting while driving, I don't know, it increases the odds of an accident from distraction at least by 20 times. The legislature likely to address that?
Well, it's interesting. Governor Branstad has already said he's going to put something in his condition of the state address on the increase in traffic fatalities in Iowa, where it had been moving in the other direction for a long time. And distracted driving is one piece of that. So I don't know how far Governor Branstad will go on that, but it's definitely going to be an issue that's out there.
Yeah, that's right. And that, as with almost any issue, when that kind of gives it a little bit more of a, puts it in the public discussion anytime the governor throws that out there at the beginning of the session. And he also talked about not only texting while driving, but we've had an increase in the number of bicycle deaths as a result of accidents this year. He talked about that and maybe laws to looking at laws to protect motorcycle riders as well. So that's going to be an interesting and that's been an issue that they've been working on in the past few years. We've seen legislation. And the big thing on the texting while driving thing is, do you make it a primary offense? Right now, you cannot be pulled over solely for texting and driving. You can only be cited for it after you've been pulled over for something else. That's the big step that advocates of stronger distracted driving laws would like to see, is making it an offense that an officer can pull you over for.
Earlier this year, we had the privatization of Medicaid management go through, be put into practice. It was delayed just a bit. I think April 1st was the day that it rolled out, and a bit of a bumpy rollout, but it's here now. Does that cast a shadow into this election, into the next session? Joyce?
Well, as we were saying before, if the Republicans take over the Senate, the Democrats are going to have a less prominent voice on this. It's definitely, the issue is not going to go away. I mean, the news today is that there's more, $30 million more going into these private companies than was earlier predicted.
The governor said it would be a money saver, right?
That's right, and he's still maintaining that it's saving money, but it's a complex issue. It's very, you know, it affects a lot of people. So it's not going to go away. I'm not sure what difference a Republican Senate would make.
Yeah, I'm going to, as eloquently as possible here, say ditto to what Joyce said, because she really summed it up well. This was an administration decision. Legislators, regardless of party affiliation, don't have a lot that they can do about this other than what you said, that oversight piece. And if Democrats are still in control, their microphone is a little bit louder.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a minute or so left. Any other quick aspects you'd like to mention regarding the legislative elections?
I noticed that the Koch brothers are in there making contributions for these state legislative races. And there had been predictions that would be the case, that as some of these big contributors like the Koch brothers, disenchanted with Donald Trump, go further and further down to legislative races. Now, they have, it's not new. They have been doing that for the last few years. But I did notice a group of more than 30 state legislators getting contributions from the Koch brothers, and they're obviously paying attention to which are the competitive races.
Right. I don't know. Does that money help? Do we know that from past times the Koch brothers have thrown in money?
Well, that segues perfectly what I was going to say. We're going to find out here how much money can influence these state house races, because Republicans, by and large, have spent more in these battleground races than Democrats. So we're going to find out how much that can move the needle at the state level.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other issues quickly before we say goodbye? All right. Maybe we should have queued up, instead of the Beatles, Can't Buy Me Love, we should say Can't Buy Me Votes or Can Buy Me Votes. I don't know. That might have been a good one. Well, I want to thank you both for coming into our Des Moines studio. Aaron Murphy, Des Moines Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises. Joyce Russell, Statehouse Correspondent for Iowa Public Radio. Thank you very much, and we'll look forward to the election results next week. And on to talking with the both of you, I'm sure, as the legislative session gets underway in 2017. Joyce, Aaron, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
Coming up tomorrow on this program, we're going to be devoting the entire hour to a mass shooting that took place on the University of Iowa campus 25 years ago tomorrow, November 1st, 1991, when a 28-year-old University of Iowa graduate student went on a shooting rampage, killing four members of the University of Iowa's faculty. One student, a graduate student from China named Gang Lu, also seriously wounded another student before he took his own life. Tomorrow on the program, one of the people we'll be talking with is Barry Schreier, University Counseling Services. He'll talk about how counseling reacts differently now than it did 25 years ago because of psychological problems and because of active shooters also on campuses and other places. We'll talk about that tomorrow. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.